Om Agyana Timran Dasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam. Why don't we all chant together? Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvahutam Parijina Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakha Vikamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Prishabhanu Sude Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Ghor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Shri Radha Kalachanji ki jai, Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai, Shri Shri Gornithai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, His Grace Aindra Prabhu ki jai, Gaur Premanandi. So, Nityananda Prabhu asked that we use this time to talk about and glorify His Grace Aindra Prabhu. So I wasn't planning on being the only speaker. So you can, all of you in the room can think about whether you'd like to, whether you had some association with him or some inspiration from him, and would like to say some words in appreciation after I jotted down some notes from that I wanted to speak about. Oops. First, I thought I would read this one thing. I was thinking, here we go, thank you, about Srila Haridas Thakur. And of course, you know, we don't want to jumply quick and compare our present-day ISKCON devotees to, Lord Chaitanya's personal associates, but there certainly is some inspiration, I'm sure, that His Grace Aindra Prabhu derived from the life and teachings of Srila Haridas, and an example of Srila Haridas Thakur. And there are some, you know, connections that we can make. Even we sometimes don't think about this, but on a certain level, in terms of society, Haridas Thakur remained a Mohammedan his whole life. It's not that there was any process by which a Mohammedan could become a Vaishnava in those times. And that's significant in the sense that the fact that, it's mentioned here, it's in the Anjalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that he was offered the first, pinda, is it? You know, so that wasn't like some small thing. It was a total shock in one sense, because he was a Mohammedan, and he kept for a long time, you know, his beard, as we see in that photo of Gadadhar Pandit reading to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Maharaj Patrapudra is there paying obeisances, and there's Srila Haridas Thakur with his Mohammedan beard. So, yet, as we all know, he was Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur, and was recognized by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and was all over the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and by the congregation of Vaishnavas at that time, as such a great soul that there's in the Anjali there's two chapters just about Srila Haridas Thakur, about his glories and then about his passing away. And so Ayendra Prabhu, he wasn't born in a Gaudiya Vaishnava family. He joined in Washington, D.C. in the USA. And yet, by the grace of his spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he attained such a level of attachment to the holy names. Sanatana Goswami, he said, you probably have heard of this many times, it's such a wonderful statement. He glorified Srila Haridas Thakur in this way. O Haridas Thakur, who is equal to you? You are one of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, you are the most fortunate. The mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for which he has descended as an incarnation, is to spread the importance of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now, instead of personally doing so, he is spreading it through you. My dear sir, you are chanting the holy name 300,000 times daily and informing everyone of the importance of such chanting. Some behave very well, but do not preach. But do not preach the cult of Krishna consciousness, whereas others preach but do not behave properly. You simultaneously perform both duties in relation to the holy name of your by your personal behavior and by your preaching. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world, for you are the most advanced devotee in the world. So we could say that Ayendra Prabhu would be right on the top of the list of devotees in ISKCON who have glorified the holy name and who have spread within our society and also in the world the importance of the chanting of the holy name. And although he wasn't chanting 300,000 times a day, which basically takes up the whole day, right? It's how many rounds is that? That's 192 rounds, right? But Ayendra Prabhu was chanting 64 rounds every day, and through his example and through his singing, so many devotees understood and gained an understanding of the importance of the holy name. One of my favorite. I don't know if you, the way Ayendra Prabhu began in Vrindavan in 1986, he moved there then, and he started on Ram Vijay Dasami, which is in Kartik, I believe, right? He started on that day, the day of Lord Ramachandra's conquering. He started the 24-hour kirtan, which has gone on ever since then, so 86, 96, 106, for the last 24 years, that has been going on continuously, the 24-hour kirtan. And one of, and he wasn't always, you know, the famous Ayendra Prabhu that we all know. When I visited Vrindavan the first time, well, I actually kind of stayed in Vrindavan for the first time in 1987 and then moved there permanently. I moved there for the last 20 years in 89. And in those days, you know, no, I didn't really even know who he was so much. He was kind of quietly doing his bhajan. I mean, I knew who he was, but he was just another one of the Prabhus. And there had been no cassettes or tapes distributed in the beginning. And he was just quietly going about his service. And I remember when he started producing cassettes, there was one title that really captured my attention. It said the name of the cassette was "Kirtan is our bhajan." It was a very bold statement. "Kirtan is our bhajan," and that was quite a statement. And as a matter of fact, I remember one sannyasi telling me once that he said, in a very appreciative way, that he said, Ayendra Prabhu has probably kept more people in ISKCON than anyone else. And he said that because, you know, as we all know, or most of us know, there was a time, especially in the starting in the early 90s and even somewhat up till today, where devotees started, you know, taking interest in Raghunuga Bhakti and where is Radharani, and, you know, trying to understand, you know, the deeper import of Braja Leela. And there was a time when people said, no, you have to go outside of ISKCON to this sannyasi or that person to gain that understanding. Yet Aindraprabhu provided that kind of katha and that kind of interest within ISKCON. And many devotees were satisfied with talking to him about such topics and didn't feel a need to wander beyond Srila Prabhupada's institution for that purpose. So he had such a multifarious impact. So I guess I'll just go through that little history. So these cassettes would come out. One of them, then he came out part one and part two of Braja. Does anyone remember? Braja Dham, was it? Or? Vrindavan Mellows, right, Vrindavan Mellows. I think there were three parts to it. Yeah, three parts to it. And during the festivals, some devotees would volunteer to set up a table and sell those. And then somehow some devotees started making orders for their gift shops. And, you know, it just kind of started in a very organic, simple way. So I just wanted to make the point that it didn't, you know, he didn't kind of just hit the scene running when he first came to Vrindavan. He was just kind of quietly had, you know, a room and a couple of devotees, and they were just slowly building up this program to, you know, where it is today, where, you know, I don't know how many hours a day we play Andhra Prabhu's bhajans here in the temple when the devotees are singing. And, you know, you go all around the world and you hear devotees playing his recordings. Previous to coming to Vrindavan, he did a very interesting program, which I kind of wonder if it would be a great thing for us to introduce in a lot of other cities. But he, with Rambhadra Prabhu, he bought a flatbed truck, right? A truck with a, you know, flatbed on it, and they set up a bhajan with loudspeakers, and they would just drive up and down the busy streets of New York City. I think they got in trouble sometimes because of safety things, you know, because it's a flatbed truck. And, you know, I'm sure they didn't have their seatbelts on, you know, they're just because it was just a flatbed truck and a mridanga player and maybe harmonium. I don't remember if it was harmonium and carpets. And sometimes what they would do is they would park, if you know, in New York, there's some really busy intersections. So sometimes they'd park on the side, on the right side, and just, you know, keep on playing there until the police, you know, move them on. So even prior to coming to Vrindavan, he was very, very attached to spreading the glories of the holy name. And his over the last few years, we've seen, you know, like I said, it kind of like, you know, his impact on ISKCON kind of was like this, and then the past few years has kind of been like that. For example, a devotee who works with him, I think probably some of you know, his name is Gopal Prabhu. He has two, a brother and a sister who are devotees, and his father is, anyone help me? He wrote the book about Srila Prabhupada in South Africa. I can't remember his name all of a sudden. Anyway, Gopal Prabhu talked to Malati Mataji, and at that time Radhana Swami was a GVC in New Vrindavan, and they agreed to have this 24-hour kirtan in New Vrindavan, which now I guess has been happening, what, maybe 4 years in a row, 3 years, right? And has become like, you know, a real big thing. And then not only that, but we see all over, practically all over the world. In Europe, they have these sometimes 12-hour, 24-hour kirtans, and many, many places. So, you know, it's something that I believe, you know, began with from the inspiration from Aindra Prabhu. So that's, you know, a huge impact on our on ISKCON and on the devotees. In terms of the, how many of you have been personally in a kirtan with Aindra Prabhu in Vrindavan? It also comes out in his recordings. Very intense, right? You know, it's not just, you know, it's like, you know, it's, it's really, really quite an intense experience, and it often builds up to just before the 7 o'clock or the RT, right? Because usually he would go from 6 till 7, or later when his throat wasn't going so well, 6:30 to 7, and so just building up to when the pujaris blow the conch shell and they begin the Gaura RT, Sandhya RT. And it, you know, builds up to a crescendo, and you know, he's kind of like the conductor. He's just conducting this whole orchestra, and also, you know, in Vrindavan, there's just crowds and crowds of people who come, and they would become so attractive, and then you'd always, almost always, there would be some person, some, you know, visiting person who would just spontaneously stand up and dance, and sometimes whole groups would dance, and it was a whole experience. And Anjaprabhu was very choosy, very much like Bibi Govinda Maharaj also, very choosy about who played what instruments. And he didn't mind if you weren't playing properly to grab the kartals right out of your hand and give them, you know, he really wanted to make sure that that things were going well. And he, you know, personally made, you know, trained the mridanga players and you know, made sure the kartals, you know, I mean, it was really it was a whole performance. You know, it reminded me when he was walking into the temple room of, you know, I mean, I don't want to get mundane, but before I was a devotee going to concerts, and you know, there would be the warm-up band, but then, and he had a warm-up band also. Some devotees were doing bhajans before he came, you know, but you know, so there's a warm-up band, but then, you know, whatever, Mick Jagger walks on the stage and everyone goes crazy, or, you know, whatever. So it was a little bit like that. He would walk into the temple and everyone would be, you know, and then he'd sit down. And he would never allow anything except the Maha Mantra, Bas. Only Radhastami, he would chant, you know, songs glorifying Srimati Radharani. But I think, I don't remember anything any other day, maybe someone else does. I don't remember any other day where there would be any other mantra. If somebody was part of the 24-hour kirtan and they started, you know, Sitaram or, you know, any slap, no, Hare Krishna mantra, only the Hare Krishna mantra. So he was fixed on that, you know, because Srila Prabhupada said that in kirtan we only need 3 mantras, the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we can sing Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Madhava Gopal Govindaram Sri Madhusudam Bas. That was it. And as we know, even on Ram Nomi in Vrindavan, at least, when a devotee started singing Raghupati Rag, Prabhupada sent Hari Sari Prabhu down, said, tell him to stop, just chant Hare Krishna. So Ainda Prabhu was very much following in that mood. Besides being such a, he was an artist, right? He was an artist. We know, you know, you hear his recordings, and they are one of a transcendentally professional artist. He was, you know, like I was saying, he was very picky about how things were done, and he had a flair. And that came out not only in his singing, but how many of you have been up to his room in the past, what, maybe 4 or 5 years? Yeah, David? Yeah, when he decorated everything with cow dung. Yes, I mean, it was incredible, right? He had different pastimes of the Lord and different decorations, all kind of like reliefs, all done in cow dung. And different motifs, and all, you know, all, and then the photos. I mean, you know, the walking up to his, because there was a separate entrance in the Gurukul building, you know, for child protection reasons and others, to get to his place. And so that whole walk up to his room was in itself a transcendental experience. Right, Davey, what else? There was photos of the deities, and what else? Do you remember?
Do
Hold on one second. Give the mic so that...
He was, as you say, he was really in particular. So when they were doing this cow dung thing, he really researched how to do it perfectly. And they experimented, because we asked them at the Gurukul side, because we wanted to imitate. The greatest compliment you can give to somebody is imitate. And they, you know, experimented with different, it's cow dung mixed with mud, and then they used Fevico, which is this glue, to keep it on the wall longer. And then, and they, before they put it up, they had waterproofed all the walls. And then he designed everything around each door. There were designs, and around each frame, and the different paintings. And then there was, you know, cows put in, and peacocks. And he had these ladies, and he would personally supervise everything. And then afterwards, it was all varnished on top of that. And so there was darker shades on lighter shades, and, you know, it was really a work of art, like living art. And he loved it, and everybody loved it.
All right, good. Keep the mic, because I'll probably ask you to add some things. Do you want to talk about management, or you want me to, or, you know, our interactions with him? I'll start. Yeah. Because I kind of witnessed it more, but Mataji and Ayinder Prabhu, you know, had some number of interactions, because she was the principal of the Gurukul and therefore kind of in charge of the Gurukul building. And Ayinder Prabhu and the 24-hour kirtan were taking up some of the rooms in the building. So there was some, you know, naturally had to be some communications and some give and take about things like paying rent. That's, oh, by the way, that point, that's another kind of like this kind of thing, because in the beginning he had no money for the 24-hour care, barely enough to maintain, you know, give the devotees some khichdi, and, you know, maybe buy them a toothbrush every now and then. But, you know, they were just, you know, living literally hand to mouth. And I think, not to say anything disparaging, but at certain times, the temple management may not have fully appreciated the importance of the 24-hour kirtan and kind of thought of it as a separate program. And so there wasn't a lot of money flowing from the temple to him either. And that also, he just built up, you know, simply beginning with, you know, a few cassette sales, and then devotees taking, you know, or you're going to the West, can you carry some cassettes with you, and maybe, you know, sell a few, and then, but, you know, then as time went on, and he became more well known, and devotees were giving donations, and he was even, I think, towards that time, paying rent to the Gurukul just out of the coffers from the 24-hour kirtan, right? Rather than from the temple side. So, you know, even Krishna blessed him with Lakshmi, but not right away. In other words, it's really important to appreciate the struggle that he went through, especially in those early years, right? Because there was often, you know, because he was there all year long. You know, we never stayed in Vrindavan in the summer. We always came to the West, and it was, for Western body devotees, it was almost inevitable that they would get sick because of the combination of first the dry heat in the summer, which would get even hotter than we have here, maybe 10 degrees hotter than we've had the last few days here, and then the monsoons with the very humid heat. And that 1-2 punch knocked out most Western devotees. And we would always, even to this day, we tell devotees, you know, who are from the West, don't stay in the summer, you know, come back at least when the rains come, because that 1-2 combination. But he was there, you know, 365 days. And in the summer, when the Gurukul wasn't open, often the generator wouldn't be turned on. So that means, you know, in the 80s, probably lots of many days in the summer when there was just no electricity and it's 120 degrees. You know, that means no fan.
On the third floor.
And they're on the third floor, which is arguably 10 to 20 degrees hotter than the ground floor. Easily, right? I mean, it's so much hotter. So much hotter. So, you know, no money. And then, again, being respectful, but especially in the beginning, the kind of devotees that joined him were, you know, okay, well, you can't do anything else. You know, you can't do sankirtan, you can't do any deity worship, you can't wash the pots. Okay, we'll go to Vrindavan and join the kirtan. You know, you're crazy. You know, I mean, seriously, he got some, you know, really, really wild people over the years. And you know, he just dealt with whoever he dealt with. When the temple would kick somebody out, he would take them on because he needed people to chant. He was committed to this 24-hour kirtan. And again, like so many things toward, in later years, he got so many, you know, very, very wonderful, like I mentioned Gopal Prabhu and Bhagavat Purana Prabhu, Ram Roy Prabhu would come often, and many devotees would visit for, you know, a few months and live with him, you know, he got the caliber of devotees that he worked with, you know, changed over the years. But again, in the beginning, it wasn't like that at all. So he performed incredible austerities to get the 24-hour kirtan going. So there was a time when Mataji was hoping to move the Ayendra Prabhu and the devotees who were taking up those 6 or 8 rooms to another facility a little further away, and she really wanted to make sure that it was a nice place and that they would be comfortable, but that the school could get those rooms in order to accommodate more children who were attending the Gurukul. And this, to say the least, this was not to Ayendra Prabhu's liking. But the important thing here is why. Why was it not to his liking? It was because he from his room he could hear the kirtan. You know, the noise rises, and he wanted to make sure that the kirtan never stopped. So even though we, you know, there was an offer, I don't know if you know where Prabhupada Vani Ashram is. It's kind of on the way to the Goshala, and there was promises to make it first class, air conditioning, this, that, you know, very, very nice, much more comfortable than where he was on the third floor of a building filled with 150 or 200, you know, children that make a lot of noise. But he wanted to stay there because he wanted to make sure that the kirtan never stopped. And he was so, because you know, of child protection rules, we had to make sure that there was a separate entrance, and no one in the 20, you know, the children couldn't go to that area, and people who worked in the 24-hour kirtan couldn't go to where the children were taking rest. So I can remember one time when you were talking to him and trying to figure out, well, how can this be done? And he was willing to do, you know, all kinds of pretty creative and, you know, as we would say, far out ways in order to make sure he could stay there. One thing was to build this little spiral staircase coming from the back of the building that would kind of crawl its way up to the third floor of the building, you know. And so his, or another one was to put a hole in the ceiling. Remember that one? And there would be like a little ladder, and they'd go up through the ceiling and then across the roof to a entrance, and that way they wouldn't, you know, be connected to where the children was. So something else was worked out eventually, but he was willing to go to some real extremes in order to make sure that he was there hearing the kirtan, making sure it was going on. At the end, he would always do a chaturmasya brat. So you would see if you, you know, in chaturmasya, you grow your beard. Well, you do a whole bunch of things, right? But you know, externally, you would know it's chaturmasya because he had a beard. And at the end of 2 months, it's a four-month period, so at the end of the first 2 months you shave, and then at the end, and there's a big feast. At the end of Kartik, when the four-month prat was done, and that was also the end of his Bhisma Panchaka prat, which was, you know, pretty austere. He wasn't able to do it physically every year, but a number of years, one day you eat, only drink cow urine, another day cow dung, another day milk, yogurt, and something else. 5 days. My point was, then he would have this feast for as many devotees as wanted to come, I believe. Maybe it was by invitation, but many, many devotees. And he would always talk to Mataji and ask her if it was okay on that day to use the Gurukul verandas for serving the prasadam. And he would orchestrate the cooking, and especially in those latter years where some funds were available, he covered the expense of the feast, which wasn't a small amount of money. And he would feed the devotees, make sure that they were, personally sometimes go around and make sure that they were well fed. Why don't you talk about graduation last year?
We've lived for years in the same building, and the students always knew Andrew Fu and had great affection for him, but they were a little bit afraid of him as well, because, we were kind of on the mundane level, and they were up on the highest level, and, just focusing on the names, where we had focused on many things. In fact, one time Andrew Fu said to me, because the boys would play in the garden in the middle of the school, and they'd play this game called kabaddi, which is a kind of a catch game. And as you're trying to catch the person, you have to say kabaddi, 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 like that. So Andrew Prabhu said, I don't mind they play the game, but please have them say Radhe, Radhe, Radhe when they're running around trying to catch each other instead of this kabaddi. So he was always looking down upon us and giving us some nice guidance. And but last year, for the graduation program, the 12th graders really wanted Andrew Prabhu to come and do kirtan in the school with them as one of the last, one of their last gatherings. So we said, well, you go ask him. And they did, and he came. And he came down, and we had all the students in the garden, and when he came in, they all stood up, and they just naturally or spontaneously started, clapping and welcoming him. And he was very touched, I think, because this was the first time he had actually... Oh, he'd come before to do a program with the teachers, but this was the first time that he'd actually come into the school. We would always go to the temple and chant with him. And he had a wonderful kirtan, of course. The boys, especially the older students, all played mridanga with him, and he just did how he does so wonderfully, getting everybody involved. And then in the end, he asked me, would I mind if he said a few words? So I said, no, of course not. And so he started talking to the students, and he said, basically he repeated that, basically throw out everything you've learned, because really, you've learned the most important thing. You've learned the one thing that you have to learn in life, that everybody has to learn in life, you have it. So you don't need anything else. And of course, that was the holy name of Krishna and chanting the holy name. And it was just such a wonderful... It was in the evening time, chanting in Vrindavan under the stars with Andhra Prabhu in the garden. I was there and I thought, it can't get much better than this. So he was very kind, and he had promised he would come and do that again with more of us. Another time, we used to, twice a week, the boys would have, just in the last year we started this, or a couple of years back, they would have this tandoori roti for supper. And to do that, you had to make a fire, because they would make them in this big drum that had cow dung on the inside, and so you had to fire it up. And when they would make the fire, all the smoke, the kitchens were down from where Ainda Prabhu's rooms were, so all the smoke would go up. And he and his party didn't like that at all. It would just last for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then it would go away. And One time, one of his brahmacharis was calling down from upstairs, saying, "You're just all interested in satisfying your tongues down there. You're just all sense gratifiers." And I was calling up saying, "I got to do it for the kids. I got to do it for the kids." So everybody was always kind of defending their area of service. But one of the teachers went to talk to Andhra Prabhu about it. And so Andhra Prabhu just said, "Well, at least you can send us up some rotis." "So I can offer them to my Thakurji." So we began to do that. So he was wonderful like that. Speaking about the devotees who served with him, one time, about 4 or 5 years back, there was somebody in our primary student's bathroom cleaning the bathroom. And so I went there right away because we were really strict about who was in the building. And I said, "Who are you? Where are you from?" He said, "I'm part of Andhra Prabhu's kirtan party." And this one of the services they had to do as being part of his party was to clean the bathrooms. That was just a requirement of living there. Of course, it didn't include the Gurukul bathrooms, but he got enthusiastic. But I appreciated that sense of menial service, and that's the qualification. You know, that was part of the training that Andhra Prabhu had for them to do that. Anything on your list about the Gurukula? Just that he would dress Radha Shyam Sundar regularly. I don't know how many times a week, but when he would dress the deities, he would he'd always stand in front of Radha Shyam during Guru Puja time, and sometimes he would discuss with the devotees, and they'd be looking at how they were dressed. And Andhra Prabhu didn't. He didn't have any ladies involved in the 24-hour kirtan, which sometimes devotees felt. Prabhupada did and felt that wasn't fair. But he was very strict in. He was very encouraging for the ladies, but he was very strict about that. So we weren't ever allowed to go upstairs to his room or on that side of the Gurukula building. So I didn't get personal association much. But one time, during Bhagavatam class, the kirtan would stop, but he would have the kirtan people had to chant japa while the Bhagavatam class was going on. And they would do it in the mandap to the right of Radha Shyam Sundar. There's this little mandap, because that's where the original 24-hour kirtan was started. So when we would sit at class, sometimes we'd hear these devotees chanting japa during class, and I got a bit annoyed with that one day. So I asked them about it, and they said, "Well, go talk to Andhra Prabhu, because he told us we had to do this." So I did. I met Andhra Prabhu afterwards, and I asked him about it, and he explained how that at Radhakund, that's what they do. They just keep the name going all the time. And he said they're supposed to. Yeah, at Raghunath Das Goswami Samadhi at Radhakund, when they do which I assume or expect was an inspiration for his 24 kirtan. Actually, he would go out there on those days and chant at that samadhi on the appearance and disappearance days of Raghunath Das Goswami. So he said how they were actually meant to chant very quietly. It was supposed to be a whisper. And he said he would talk to them about that. And I asked him. But then he smiled and he said to me, "But you know, you can chant," he said, "you can chant the holy name and listen at the same time to Bhagavatam class." He said, "I can do that." So I appreciated he took the time to speak to me.
Just in general, the way he interacted with you.
Yeah. He was always very gentlemanly. Sometimes, on occasion, he would come into the school if he was very anxious about something with regard to electricity or... And just to get back to the third floor, was really, really hot, and it was just last year that they put in ACs up there for he and all the people who live there, and he did get very sick over the years staying there, really, really sick, because it's extremely, it's just so extremely intense and hot in that building. But on occasion he would come in, flying in with his curtains flying, and he would burst through the office door and, you know, proclaim that, you know, I needed to do something for him or this or that, but always very respectful, always just to, you know, not mean or demanding, but just intensely enthusiastic and requesting me to, you know, take care of whatever issue needed to be taken care of. So I always found him very, very, just a gentleman, actually, in his dealings with me.
Yeah. You know, when you mentioned about Bhagavatam, anyway, I remember he would, for a number of years, maybe 5 or 6, 7 years, he would be listening up in his room to the Bhagavatam class. And so if you're there giving the class, and then you see him towards the end of the class walking in, you know, uh-oh. Because often he would, he would kind of sometimes, you had to, of course, call on him if he has his hand up, he can't, like, you know. Although I would, like, try to leave it to the end and see anyone else, you know, and kind of, like, make believe I didn't see him for a little while. Because he'd either ask a very difficult question, but more often he would give his own Bhagavatam class after that, you know, kind of pick up on something that he wanted to say. And a matter of fact, one time he gave, like, a 4-hour Bhagavatam class. I think after that, management didn't let him give another class for some time. Went on until, like, the noon RT or something like that. But I remember I was... my only hope was, I didn't mind, you know, him going on. My only hope was that he wasn't going to, you know, correct something, you know, that I said, you know, in the class or something like that. Because you'd see him coming in, because you know he's listening, and it wasn't always. But when he did decide to come down, I was like, okay. I think I had. In terms of his health, I remember one time he had. I think it was his eye. He had a really bad infection in his eye. I think it was his eye, and it wasn't going away for a long time. It looked really bad, so I went up to him. I said, "Look, Prabhu, you know, why don't we just go to? I'll take you to Apollo Hospital, which was at that time there was one really good hospital in Delhi. Now there's a number, but that was, you know, it's almost a Western quality hospital. As a matter of fact, a lot of Westerners fly from America there to get operated on because, you know, they have this medical tourism." So I said, you know, it won't cost her anything, just, you know. He refused. He said, I'm not leaving Vrindavan. the other thing that I remember in terms of his health was, of course, it was an ongoing thing that he would lose his voice. Right? Because, again, if we've all heard his recordings, it wasn't just Hare Krishna, it was intense chanting. And that really does something to your vocal cords. So one thing that helped him was, I forget the full name, but maybe you know, you see them in drugstores, these fishermen, what are they called? Yeah, Fisherman's Friends, yeah. I think there's different ones, and he liked the darker color package. Yeah, so we would try to stock up on those when we visited in the summer. And bring them, and those he would be kind of popping in his mouth as he was singing. On his harmonium, I think it was a Panchatattva, he had a little picture, about this big on his harmonium, and I believe it was a Panchatattva that he would sing to as he was chanting. So let me just look real quickly at my notes here. Those were the main thing. Oh, well, one thing is, he wasn't an easy person to imitate. He really is a unique person in the true sense of the word unique. And there was many attempts to try to get him to conform. At one time, you know, we went through a lot of temple presidents in Vrindavan. I think Devi Shakti Mataji counts 26 when she joined there in 76. So I remember one time there was there was co-presidents who came from a for lack of a better word, a conservative ISKCON mindset. So they didn't appreciate Ayendra Prabhu's dress. I think most of us know how he would dress. He would dress like Babaji. It was one piece of cloth that I never figured out how to wear it actually, but it would kind of, somehow or other it would cover his bottom and top. I don't know how he did it, but it would, one piece of cloth. So they tried to force him to wear a saffron dhoti, because he was a brahmachari, so he should wear a saffron dhoti. That didn't go over very big. But similarly, over the years, there would sometimes be a devotee who would join his group and try to, you know, either sing like him, or dress like him, or perform austerities like him, and it just wasn't the same. It wasn't the, of course it was in all sincerity and things, but you just, you know, there's certain people that, you know, he just obviously had such powerful purva samskars, you know, impressions from previous births that most of us didn't have. And so for those who tried to imitate, you know, I don't mean to say we made fun, but it was almost a little comical because you could just see the difference. You know, Ayendra, you know, looked like a sadhu, and sometimes he's otherwise kind of look like, you know, Barney Rubble or something like that, you know, tried to dress. And I don't mean to, you know, criticize Vaishnavas, but my point is not to make fun of them, but my point is that, you know, there's certain people you just can't imitate. Right, that we say about Krishna, right? That we or even the spiritual master, right? You follow in their footsteps. You don't try to imitate them. So he wasn't a person to be imitated. He was, you know, certain things, of course, his attachment to the holy name, and even for those of us who can, his chanting of 64 rounds and things like that. But the level of his austerity, the intensity of his, you know, he was a very, very intense person, especially when you started talking to him about a topic that he was passionate about. Then it was incredibly intense. Right? Incredibly intense.
Yeah, and last year for, I think it was the disappearance festival of Prabhupada, Andrew's, he's always very intense and very has strong feelings. And his offering was about how really one should concentrate on the holy name and forget everything else. And so a little bit down on management. But, you know, his point was good, but he expressed it in quite a dramatic, one could say artistic, and in a way that actually some senior devotees there felt very hurt and offended by his offering, that their service may not be, you know, it appeared that he wasn't appreciating, he was putting down their services and just pushing up the chanting. So there was a bit of a stir in Vrindavan at that time. But then the next morning after Mangalarti, Ayendra Prabhu, in front of a huge temple room full of people, he actually got up and made an apology and said that, you know, and clarified what he was trying to say. But, you know, I just appreciated so much just the ability for someone of that stature and of that caliber and of that advancement to come in front of all the Vaishnavas and humbly apologize for hurting the other devotees and that wasn't his intention. So his intensity sometimes got the better of him, and then he had to pull it back a little bit.
Right, he didn't steer away from controversy sometimes. But, you know, it was clear that whatever he was doing, the intention was Krishna conscious. Sometimes the impact, you know, like you said, you know, there was a couple of incidences over the years, but although sometimes things had to be clarified, I won't go into any details, but the point is that his intention was always in the right place. And I think that's a very, very important thing to remember for all of us. You know, we may also sometimes get carried away, or we may do some stupid thing. But generally, devotees in the service that I deal with these things, and you see that generally the 98% of the time the devotee's intentions are good. Sometimes their impact doesn't match their intention, and that can be a problem. But they don't mean harm or mean to do harm or hurt other people. So he was a very intense person. Finally, that temple management just made him the one exception. No one else on your party can dress like you. No one else. You only. Bus. Finish. And so they made that caveat. So that's what I had. But other devotees who would like to say something? Would you like to sit here, bro? Microphone will come in a second, bro.
Lord Chaitanya's most important instruction, well, at least we can say there are many instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave were very, very important. But one of them that really stands out is Amara, where he said that Amara Agyaya Guru Hana Tarai Desh Yaritaki Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh. Ayanta Prabhu exemplified that. He was truly a spiritual master. He really influenced a lot of people in their Krishna consciousness, like you were saying. And like any spiritual master cannot be imitated, you know. People can say, well, after the spiritual master leaves, the disciples become spiritual masters, and they may try to behave like their spiritual master, but it always ends in failure. You have to be yourself, but you learn the principles from the person. And with Ayanta Prabhu, at our temple we have his kirtans going on all the time. One of the sets of kirtans that happens is his set of kirtans. And people again and again will ask for copies of that kirtan because they hear it and they really appreciate it. But off late, when I went to Vrindavan, the last trip I went was about 3 months ago, I was doing japa, walking around the temple, just doing japa, doing parikrama, like many devotees do. And there's no doubt about it that he was the apple of everyone's eye. Like, he was such a famous devotee that wherever he went, people congregated around him, you know. And I noticed while I was doing kirtan, I wanted to speak to him, but I noticed there's so many people who want to speak to him. And when he's outside the temple, just where we wash our feet as we come out of the temple on the side that Radha Shyamsundara, when you go towards Goshala. So there's a meeting that had happened of the Indian RGB, all the leaders of India had come to New Delhi to have a meeting, and then they all came to Vrindavan. And so some of them were talking to him, they were just congregating around talking to him, casually with other devotees. One thing I noticed about him was that he hardly spoke. He just listened, And I could tell it was pure humility, because there were times when I'd stand there and I knew that he could say something, but before he would say something, somebody else would want to say something. Because the nature of, devotees generally is that, we like to talk, not hear. We like to talk. But in his case, he really liked to hear. I could see that even though he could have interjected and said something, he didn't. He just kept quiet, let everybody keep talking. There was one particular devotee, one of the Indian leaders, who really sort of like wanted to talk, And he repeated himself so many times, the same thing. And I thought, why didn't you let him speak? You're asking him questions, and then you're answering your own question, I mean, what type of a question is that, when you ask a question and you answer it yourself? I mean, that means you're trying to tell somebody you know something, And he wasn't like that at all. He was really very, very humble, a very humble person, no matter how, sort of famous he became. He kept his humility. And, that's a very difficult thing to do in those circumstances. So he was really, what I wanted to say was he's really, truly a spiritual master. And when I heard that he had left, I heard from Manjuali, first person I heard from, that he had left his body. she had called from India to let me know that that had happened. And the first thing that occurred in my mind was that, you know, we should dedicate all our programs today and tomorrow like that to him. Because, you know, imagine an important spiritual master leaving his body. People do things that go beyond the normal, you know, in terms of remembering devotees who are very important who have left their body. This is a very special devotee who has left his body, you know. And so I just wanted to say that today and tomorrow all our programs are dedicated to him. We'll be doing kirtan all the way tomorrow till Mangalarti in one shape, form or another, including today we think of going out on Harinam, because, you know, Harinams are such an important part of expressing kirtan. And tomorrow also, and, you know, we have the youth coming in. Unfortunately, their bus broke down, and so they're delayed. But they'll be here sooner or later. You know, we're making arrangements for other ways to get them here if the bus can't bring them. And so, you know, they'll be here, and they'll be really enthusiastic, but they love kirtan as well. So I just wanted to say to everybody, this is our great opportunity to take blessings from this personality by participating in what he wanted to teach us. And that was, the most important thing was the holy name of the Lord. In any and every way that we could actually identify with the holy name of the Lord, associate with the holy name of the Lord, particularly spread the holy name of the Lord, that we should make every effort in whatever we do to connect like that in whatever we do. And I was very happy to hear from Mother Nanda Vrindavaneshwari how, when he's in his talk that he gave to the students, that he actually highlighted that point, you know. That was his life. And, you know, we definitely can learn that from it and become much better devotees as a result of learning that. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
You reminded me of something you said, reminded me of one other super important service that Ajahn Prabhu would do, and that is that he would always chant to devotees who were leaving their body. And, of course, a lot of devotees leave their body and not.
Who has a samadhi there? I'm just going blank. But anyway, you'll remember his name in 10 seconds, I hope. Great. So many devotees. This was his standard service. And as a matter of fact, where we live, Prananda Matsuji's house is just opposite, and the top floor was often used as a hospice for devotees at that time, because the new hospice actually is going to be inaugurated quite soon, I think in the next couple of months, a big facility for devotees leaving their body. So we would often be hearing, you know, the bhajans. Remember conversations with my wife and saying, gosh, what, there couldn't be anything better than to leave your body in Vrindavan with Ajna Prabhu singing, you know, and Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu, who's another person we could spend the next 24 hours glorifying, and he has a samadhi there in the Goshala, and so he was there. And then when our Diren Sen, Dadu, a famous devotee who delivered the mail when he was leaving this world, he would have kirtan for him. Yeah, you were going to say?
But often,
oh, 1 second, you might as well get the mic, right?
Yeah. There's quite a few occasions where Andrew just showed up right at the right time. Didn't know the person was going to leave, you know, because you never quite know. But on a few occasions, people were amazed that, you know, he was just so tuned in, and then he would just show up and be there when the person left.
Yes, and he was willing to just...
This young girl who was that accident in Vrindavan where she got shot, and she was in a coma, and there was kirtan going on, and they expected her to be in a coma for quite a few days, and then, you know, Ajahn Prabhu arrived, and within an hour she left. You know, those kind of things would happen with Ajahn Prabhu, very extraordinarily wonderful mysteries of you know, that
energy. I remember with Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu, he was just basically, look, I'm here until he leaves. I'm just going to stay here. I mean, often when persons were deathly sick, but it wasn't clear, you know, he would have a schedule 2 hours in the evening or something like that. But it was a very, very important service that he rendered. And I know devotees who were leaving their bodies felt a great amount of solace knowing that he was there and chanting. And he would often start off, I mean, I was only in not at all, so many, but he would start off in a very kind of solemn way, but sometimes he would, you know, he would really get the room rocking. And you know, because he was very fixed in understanding dehi nushminyata dehi komaram yovaram jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namir. He would just be like in bliss when someone left, because he knows they were hearing the holy name, they left this world, and he would just, you know, he wasn't lamenting for the passing away of the body. Something you said sparked me in my memory about that. Other devotees? Pardon me?
In those last moments when he left, what was that pastime? You know, were the devotees then around his bed chanting?
This yesterday?
Yes.
The reports that we're getting is that when the accident happened with the cylinder, that somehow or other he made his way to his deities and paid obeisances to his deities. No, it was an accident. Oh, I don't know if you know, right? There was in India, you cook with gas cylinders, and there's at least two main sizes, a very big one, and then a smaller one, which is about 5 kgs. And it was a small one. Actually, one of the managers in the temple mentioned that if it had been one of the bigger ones, it probably would have blown off the roof of the Gurukul. So somehow or other, this cylinder exploded, and the reports that we've gotten is that that he somehow made his way to the deities and paid obeisances and was found in that position paying obeisances to his deities. And that he had previously requested that his body be cremated at the Yamuna, and that some of the ashes be sprinkled nearby his deities. He had lots of deities, right? I mean, does anyone know how many shalagrams? Yeah, I mean, like, serious amount of shalagrams, yes. And another Gornitaya, I know he had, yeah. I think, yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I just wanted to relate a couple small remembrances. When I joined the temple in Chicago, the first year there in 1979, he was also a devotee living there, and Brahmachari. And I just some remembrances. I remember sometimes seeing him. We had a really old YMCA building. Sometimes he'd be sleeping in the stairwell with a gumsha on. And, you know, this is to show how austere. I mean, he was like this even back then, where, you know, just with a gumsha and maybe a cheddar wrapped over him, his head draped down a step. Just, you know, that's where he'd sleep sometimes. I was coming back from doing Sankirtan downtown Chicago on the subway train, and he happened to be come through the car that I was in, and he was doing the pick on the subway train, going up to people with a little piece of paper that said, "I'm deaf and dumb, please make a donation to help me." And so, you know, he was always performing austerities even back then, and then more recently, in 2003, I had my first visit to Vrindavan Dham, and I was in the computer room, and he came in. And so, you know, we started to talk about some of our, you know, being together back in Chicago. And then he spoke about how he was having difficulties with his throat, and the doctors told him he may have to limit his singing to a very minimal amount, and otherwise he may, you know, lose his voice completely. And as he was telling me that, tears started to roll down his face, and he was lamenting just the idea that he would have to do that. And he said, if that happens, he says, I'll be forced to just take shelter of my japa. Some way he was talking like that. And then I also had the good fortune of somebody mentioning about those fisherman lozengers. So when I went there this last year, I went to his room to offer him that as a small gift. And I could tell he was very busy. It was right before he was supposed to go down for the kirtan. And he invited me to go to the kirtan. And prior to that, in Mayapur, he was there right before Gaur Purnim. And I remember one night, I was walking over towards the samadhis. It was about 10:30, and I could hear this. I started hearing this kirtan. I said, "Well, you know, I think I was only there for maybe one day at that time." I said, "I better go and I want to go and see what's going on." But I knew I was going to be getting up very early, and I didn't want to spend too much time over there. I mean, yeah, it's hard to say, you know, how do you not want to spend time in the kirtan? But I knew I also wanted to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning or somewhere in that area. And so I went over to the temple room, and there was this huge kirtan going on. And Madhava was, I think his name is Madhava Prabhu, was leading the kirtan, and Andrew was sitting right next to him. And I stood there, and I was watching them, and it was as if beams of ecstasy were coming off of Iendra, and the whole temple room was just these waves of going up and down and up and down. I was stunned. I stood there in one spot for 45 minutes. Every now and then I would think, Prabhu, you really should leave. Maybe you should leave. You'll never, you know, what's this going to do to you next morning? But I couldn't leave. I was just totally stunned by that kirtan and his presence there. And finally the kirtan ended in 45 minutes, and I've kind of escaped from there, knowing that I would never leave if I stayed there and it started up again. And it seems like there was one other thing. After that one kirtan, he did make a little speech, and I remember his whole speech, his lecture for 10 or 15 minutes was how everything within this movement, everything within our personal lives, all the answers to all the problems will come by performing this kirtan like this. And it is like if our temples just inaugurated these kirtans continually, he was going on and on how that would revitalize everybody's life in Krishna consciousness. Andhra Prabhu Ki
Jai. One thing you said reminded me, because I was sometimes, talk to him or witness how his voice was just shot, totally shot. And I've seen this many times, and then the next day he's leading this intense kirtan, where I would have taken a week off from talking probably and just done silent japa, and I don't know where he got that ability to do that, because it was just, I mean, sometimes you talk to him, right, and it was just like there was no voice left. And then that evening you'd see him leading this intense kirtan, sometimes going way high right at the towards the end, hitting the high up. So I don't know, it was amazing how he Krishna gave him that energy.
Those are the lozenges, yes.
Those
are your gift.
Andhra Prabhu Ki. I was really, really fortunate to get to meet Andhra Prabhu in Mayapur during it was a seminar for deity worship. And I didn't know he did deity worship. But he was there, and he was dressed in this amazing outfit. It was like a bodysuit almost, but it was like made of this terry cloth. You know the cloth that tennis people have their bandanas are made of? You know that? It was made of that. And it looked really cooling. And his body was golden, and he was effulgent personality. And he was sitting there in a chair, and Pankajungri and Jnanavivas Prabhu were there too. They were the leaders of the seminar on deity worship, but Iendra was the lead speaker. And this was an introduction. This was introductory. This was level one of the deity worship. So Iendra Prabhu begins to speak, and I'd heard about him before, and I'd seen him. One time I saw him in a kirtan in Mayapur. I think it was the night before, maybe it was a couple years before. Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu and I walked into the temple room, in the big Panchatattva temple room, and there was a little stage set up to the right of the altar, and he was there doing his bhajan with some devotees. And all of the devotees that walked up to it, it's like Gopal Prabhu said, everyone was stunned because it was so intense and beautiful and amazing. And we just stood there and our jaws kind of hit our chin, you know, jaws hit the floor, and we're like, wow. Because it was just beaming out this amazing Krishna melody, and it was deep and intense and spiritual. And we were just going like, wow, I'd never seen anything like it or heard anything like it before. And we've heard it on his tapes. You know, if you get the CDs, it's like that. But when you actually heard him doing it, it was unbelievable. And Panchatattva were there, we were there, and we thought, gosh, you know. It was during Panchatattva's installation when they got installed. And so that was the first time I had ever seen him and just been blown away. And I tried to take a photograph later on when he was doing bhajan, and he looked at me very intensely like, don't take my photograph while I'm doing this. And but I still got the shot, and then I didn't take any others. So we later on, I was in the deity workshop, the deity worship seminar, and he was speaking, and he began to go really, really deep into a deity worship and what he felt, why he did it, what motivated him. And he was very, he dressed Radhe Shyam, and he said that they were his worshipable deities. I think I'm safe to say that. And he said that he was worshiping them under the direct, or what he, under the shelter, he had taken shelter of Lalita Devi. And Lalita Devi was really his guide. And you could feel it, the intensity of his love for the deities, for deity worship, and that he'd really had a personal relationship with the deities, and that he'd gone so deep that he was really aware of his relationship with Krishna and with Lalita Devi as one of, you know, her helpers. And it was just amazing, you know, to hear him speaking these things. And we were all just blown away. We couldn't believe it. Like, you know, this is it. So Pankajungri Prabhu, after a little bit of this, said, Prabhu, wait a minute. This is level one. You're talking on level five. And Andrew Prabhu just said, oh, no problem. It's okay to hear this. You should be aware of it, you know, even though you're just starting out. I mean, most of the devotees had done deity worship for a long time, but he said, still, this is good for you to know. This is good. And he didn't miss a beat. He just kept on talking at that level, pretty much. But it was also very practical. You know, the course was practical, how to dress a certain ways and do certain things, and pins and not pinning the deities and flowers. But his speaking on it was so deep. And he spoke about how now all of the deities now are on video, and it goes out all the time. And so he said that he would always be aware of that. He always wanted to dress nicely, but he encouraged us to dress nicely because the whole world was seeing this, and it was for Krishna too. But one thing that he mentioned that he was the first to do was begin to use the little teardrop-shaped mukut pieces, the head pieces that go on Srimati Radharani. It's a little teardrop shape. Some devotees call them chandrikas, but they're like parts that go like, you know, part of the little part that's sticking up on Kalachandji's head would go right on Radharani's forehead at her hairline. Have you all seen that before? He said he was one of the first to really ever do that. And then when it went out, devotees would see pictures and it spread. So rightly so, I think he gets credit for that. And he was very close to the deities. He was very, close to, felt very strongly about serving Radhe Shyam and Srimati Radharani, especially under Lalita Devi's, tutelage. And four or five days of classes, and I could only go to three of them. But just in that short time, he affected me so, so deeply. I mean, for me, he's one of the top five devotees that ever affected me. That there's the section in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, that even a moment's association with a pure devotee can affect you, can change your life. And I feel like it was that way for me, meeting him, because he was so deeply Krishna conscious and friendly. He was super friendly and very open, and he would speak his mind. And you knew that he was telling you everything that you needed to hear. He wasn't holding anything back. There was like no duplicity or defensiveness. Everything we needed to hear about deity worship, in fact, a lot more than we needed to hear, he was telling us. He wasn't going to hold back anything. And I've only met a couple other devotees that were as friendly as he was, that you knew his heart was totally open to you and he liked you, because he could see you beyond just your material covering. He was looking at you as a spirit soul. And Mother Kirtida was like that. She was like that. She treated devotees that way, and that's why everyone loved her. And you could tell everyone loved Dayendra because of that. And he was brutally honest. So, someone like that will not always be so popular. But if you can get past, if you can see what he's really trying to say, you have to admit, wow, he's true. It's right. It's true, But effulgence and the way he carried himself, and I'm just really, really grateful that I got even a tiny amount of time to associate with him, and I learned so much about deity worship from him. And but I wanted to share that because his way of dealing with people that I saw was so Krishna conscious. He was a very Krishna conscious person. And to me, I mean, I know he did bhajans and chanting and 24-hour kirtan, but to me, I always think of him as a deity worship expert. Like, his thing was deity worship. And if you can imagine anyone to dress Radhe Shyam on a regular basis, I mean, they're such beautiful deities. And so for me, I just wanted to share that and encourage devotees to do deity worship. We've got Radha Kalachandji right here, and he's just waiting for our touch. He wants us to touch him. He likes that. And one other quick thing. I don't know if I ever went to his room. I feel like I did. Because if I didn't, then I feel like I've been there spiritually, because I've heard it described so nicely. Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu, and I'm sure he's going to speak. And also Namaruchi Prabhu went there. And so hopefully they'll share with us, because it's totally transcendental when you hear what his room was like and his deities. And I heard so many nice things from them about it that went into my heart real deeply too, to feel how he lived with his deities in his room. Is really amazing. So maybe I can pass the microphone to His Grace Chaitanya Chandra Prabhu. Ayendra Prabhu Ki!
Shri Shri Radhe Shyam Ki Jai. Yeah, the that was definitely one of the main motivations and highlights to go to Vrindavan, was to be part of his kirtan. I think everybody must have felt that, at least a lot of the devotees. The last time I was there was after Gaur Purnim, when they did the boat festival. And Ayendra Prabhu and Bibi Govinda Maharaj and Shivam Maharaj, I don't know if he was there at that time. Dina Bandhu was there. Anyway, after the boat festival, they did a stand-up kirtan where Dina Bandhu and Bibi Govinda Maharaj and Ayendra Prabhu led the kirtan. And that was like a New York-style, fired up, really powerful kirtan. It was really ecstatic. It went for about an hour and a half. And that was really wonderful. So I don't remember if it was that night or it was one of the other nights. Well, one of the nights I went up there was his birthday. I just followed him from his kirtan because I knew him back on Radha Damodar days when we used to go out and distribute books. So I went up to his room and just kind of just was there in his room as many devotees were coming and giving him gifts for his birthday. And he was actually giving someone Shalagram Shila, and he described the whole how to worship the Shalagram and described the Shalagram worship in a very nice way. And I learned a lot of things just listening to him because I had never worshipped Shalagram. But that was really wonderful. And then somebody else came in and asked him about chanting, and then he started preaching about the glories of the holy name and the congregational chanting for another hour or so to this devotee. And he was nonstop preaching the whole night. And finally, at maybe, I think I went up there at around 8 o'clock or so. I don't remember what time his kirtan finished. What time was his shift over?
7 o'clock.
Okay. So then, sometime after that, we walked up to his room. So I was there pretty much the whole night. And it was really wonderful just to hear him preach. He was telling me some things that were kind of interesting to me as a god brother. I thought was kind of far out. He was saying that some of the devotees didn't want him to give classes because they weren't sure what he was going to say. But when I heard him preaching up there for like 3 hours, all different varieties of subject matters and stuff, I didn't hear anything except Prabhupada's philosophy in a really sweet, realized way. And so that was really wonderful. So finally at around maybe, I don't know, 12:30, everybody left. So it was just he and I there. And then he realized that he hadn't fed his deities and the Shalagrams yet. So I said, well, what can I do to help? So he sent me somewhere to get samosas and sweets and different things. So I went and bought a bunch of different things and came and brought them up, and he offered them to his deities, and we sat there and talked for a while longer, till around 1:30 or so. And he gave me a little piece of maha cake, and I took the tulsi leaf off and ate it and gave the guard the cake, the chokidar guy there at the gate. But anyway, he was really sweet, and Dharma mentioned his room. very wonderful. It was made from... all the rooms are brick covered with concrete in those small rooms. So he customized it by using cow dung and Yamuna sand, I believe, and made some kind of mixture and coated all the walls with it. And then within the coating, there were different designs, like different vines with flowers. And I don't remember all the details. I didn't get to take any pictures of the room. I did take some pictures of the room, but they didn't come out. But when you walk into his room, right on the, as soon as you walk in, was a lot of his sound equipment taking up a lot of the space. I don't know how it is now, but this was like in 2006. And then there was a very small little spaces where a few people could sit down. And then there was his table with the Shalagrams. And then he had these two beautiful big Gornatais that he rescued from the Padyatra bus. that caught on fire at some point somewhere, and he got the deities, and they were in his room. So this big table, he had 300 or so shilagrams, maybe more. I forget how many. And then the big, big gornatais. And I'm not sure where he slept, actually, because the room is actually pretty small. Behind Gornatai. So there's a little bit of space behind Gornatai than some other things. So he didn't have much room in there, but a lot of transcendental activities were going on. But when he walked in, it was very pleasing to see the room because it was cow dung, and it was all beautiful custom work. So it was like very artistic. So you could see he had a very nice artistic ability. And wow, I can go on and on talking about Andhra Prabhu, but anyway, someone else may want to speak. Andhra Prabhu ki jai.
Hare Krishna. Andhra Prabhu ki jai. So in, I think it was 2007, my wife and I went to Vrindavan, and I got several opportunities to spend some time up in Andhra's room. I took pictures also, so you want to see. And I took a video of that kirtan with Bibi Govinda Maharaj, little clips. There was another one with 2006 that we were there? Okay, 2006. I can't remember everything. But at one point I told my wife, I said, oh, I'm going to go up to visit Ayendra Prabhu, and I'll be right back. So I came back 5 hours later. So I was up there, and He read me some passages from his book. It's a book about the holy name, but it was said to be about book distribution. A lot of it was about the chanting of the holy name. He also spoke about this going outside of ISKCON. He expressed some of his realizations that at some point, he wanted to not only know what is he not, like we all know that we're not the body, but who is he? Who is he? Who is he as a spirit soul? Like, what's his relationship? And he had this anxiety, who am I? And he said that he got some realizations from Srila Prabhupada, and that basically Prabhupada will give you everything. There's no, you need to go to this school, this other mat or this sannyasi to get deep realizations of your relationship with Krishna. And one thing you notice is that he had he was very accommodating. He was always allowing people to come to his room, even though he would only sleep a couple hours or so. He had the time for everybody to welcome into his room and speak, and he would just have, he would go to sleep. I don't know what time he would go to sleep. Sometimes I think in the middle of the afternoon was the only time he slept, or something like that. But he would always be very gracious and invite everybody, and allow people to come in, and was very patient, just preaching to everybody. I bought two of the screaming babies from him for Amala Kirtan, and I bought one for myself, but I traded that with Amal. And he only wanted to sell the screaming baby harmoniums. He only wanted to sell those if they were going to be used for Harinam. He said, "I don't want this. I don't want to be used for your home bhajan or things like that." He wanted them used for Harinam Sankirtan. Remember a few other things. Yeah, I have pictures if anybody wants to see. And I have a nice video clip.
I just wanted to say one other thing, that he was a great inspiration to everybody in the world with his kirtan. So many people, how many people don't listen to his kirtan, let's say, can hardly find anybody who doesn't listen to Andhra's recordings. And his enthusiastic, loving deity worship. So he was actually lived a perfect life of devotional service, which is the goal of our existence, actually, is to take up the process and live in 24 hours of devotional service, become an eternal servant of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. So he was an example of that, always absorbed in his service to the deities and the kirtan and all the devotees. So that was a perfect life. And then when you go to Vrindavan, you go there because you want to die there. You want to become absorbed in devotional service and you want to leave your body. That's when you go to see all the different older people that retire in Vrindavan, all the different, from all the different temples. People are going there so they can become absorbed in Krishna consciousness and so that they can leave their bodies there and go back to Godhead. So these extraordinary people who are so fortunate and so intelligent that they go to Vrindavan for that reason, and he's a success story. Not only just a success story, but an inspiration for the world. Ananda Prabhu Ki Jai.
One other thing I remembered is that he personally tuned the harmonium. He sat there for hours just tuning the harmonium for me. It was really nice. And like I said, even though he had such, you know, he would worship his deities for, I think, was it 5 hours every day? He had his kirtan program. He barely slept, but he would always be very open and welcome to talk to people and be very, very gracious in that manner.
It's great to say, Andrew Prabhu Ki Jai. There's a lot to say. Just go with whatever comes to mind. I guess the main thing that comes to mind was I was listening to his lectures a lot when I was in India. I went with the mood of, you know, I'm here in the holy Nam, and so it was really interesting because when I was going by myself to Vrindavan, and I'd never taken a train in Vrindavan, you know, in India. Well, but I'd never taken a train by myself. So one congregation devotee helped me out, and so he said, "Don't worry, Radharani's going to take care of you." So just when I went to the place where I was going to sit, there's a sticker on the wall, like, and it said something in Hindi or something, and I asked the devotee, "Well, what does it say?" He said, "It says Radhe, Radhe." So anyways, when I arrived, the first thing as I was going up the stairs, the first person I saw was Ayendra Prabhu, and he was coming straight down, and he had this perfect posture, and he just had these deep black eyes that could just look you straight into the soul. And so afterwards, I noticed that he had this project of building the ashram, and so I asked him if I could help him. And when I met him, I introduced myself, and he said, "My name is Ayendra Das, and I am in Madhurya Ras, and my service." And he said, "My service is to clean the toilets and chant Hare Krishna." And so from there, you know, he engaged me in different services, you know, and I saw just how he lived. You know, he dressed very simply, even though it was cold at the time. I was there in December, and it was very cold, and he just, you know, wore that one piece of cloth. And, you know, I saw him working hard, you know, and I also saw the other aspect. Some people wouldn't appreciate what he was doing, you know. I saw somebody bring out a gumsho right outside their room, and he came out and he saw the puddle of water and he said, "Who did this?" And he looked, you know, he went to the room and he asked the person, "Why are you being lazy? The hallway is just down the bathroom is just right down the hallway. Why don't you go to the bathroom and wring it out?" And anyways, there's so much to be said. I just he just said different times. So he allowed me to help him, make some of the designs, and he showed me, and he would be working at it, all night. You know, when everybody was asleep, he'd be up working on those. And I remember I went to bed just when he would be working on one, and the next morning when I would wake up, I'd go and I'd look at it, he'd be finished. And yeah, just the cow dung designs that were on the picture frames, you know, that he was putting up the picture frames, and so he would be drilling the holes, and he was so intense, you know, everything was determination and focus, and he would call me like, "Give me some of those screws over there," so I'd give him the screws and screw them in, and so many, I don't know, I feel myself very fortunate to have met him. He really changed my life. One thing he said to me was, when I was working at it, I was really mental because I'd never done anything like that before, and I didn't want to mess it up. And he told me, "Don't think, just do." he came another time and he saw me, and I was doing it very slow because I'm just a very slow person. He told me, "You're going nowhere fast." I had only one time I got to be with him up in his room when he was speaking with everybody, and he was preaching, you know, constantly. You know, if he wasn't chanting or visiting, you know, when I was there, he was doing this Katyayani Vrat, and so he would go to this temple and he was chanting all these rounds. And so in the evening he would have his kirtan, and he was always supervising the whole construction of the whole, you know, the decorations. He was like a transcendental conductor, director, and so he was speaking to some devotees, and then somebody, he was trying to encourage everybody to do kirtan, that wherever we're at, our primary activities should be Harinam Sankirtan. That should be our goal of everything. Our lives should be centered around Harinam Sankirtan. And he was trying to encourage one devotee, and he was sort of like, "Well, you know, I'm not really a kirtan leader." And he said, "What's your name?" And he said, "My name is Jagannath Kirtan." He said, your name is Jagannath Kirtan. You should do kirtan. You know, so he's always trying to encourage the devotees. And so that night I stayed up. You know, he was speaking with everybody, and I was there with him until the end. And it was around 12 o'clock, and he was, you know, just preaching on and on. And I could see that he was tired, but I knew I was leaving the next day, so I really wanted to have some of his lectures and CDs. And so he gave me, you know, he was writing them just when he would burn the CDs. And then when he was writing, he wrote his name on it, but I could see he was falling asleep. His head was dozing. And even when he was writing his name, you could see in the CD is the pen mark is like, you know, because he fell asleep. And then I was just really impressed by that. That he just, you know, he never complained, like, "I'm sorry, Prabhu, you know, I gotta go take some rest." He was just, just an amazing person. And I could go on and on, but so afterwards he just got right up, and it was like he had slept. Like, he got right up and he's like, "Now I'm going to do my puja." And he said it like takes him like 5 hours. It was 12 o'clock at night. He said, "I'm going to do my puja." And then he gave me some mahaprasadam and asked him, "Prabhu, can I have a hug?" And he didn't seem like that kind of person that you can say be all sentimental around, even though he was talk about these, you know, he was preaching. He wasn't like a sentimental person. He was, I saw him working harder than everybody else, and he was living what he was preaching, and he gave me a hug. Even though that wasn't the kind of person he was, he still gave me that hug, and he gave me a little mahaprasadam, and I left, and that was the last time I ever saw him. I listened to some of his lectures, and I was very grateful to listening to him, because I felt that he inspired me very in my Krishna consciousness in a way that I had never. He introduced me to things that I had never heard, but he would always say that, you know, this is all in Srila Prabhupada's books, and every time I would read Prabhupada, every time from now that I read Prabhupada's books, I always remember the things that he said in his lectures. And when one of his lectures, I heard what he never, he only had one exchange with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada only said one thing to him. And Prabhupada was in Potomac, Maryland, and they were going from his quarters, and they were doing kirtan. And he was playing a mridanga, and he couldn't really play it very well. He said he was just banging away on the drum and screaming at the top of his lungs. And then Srila Prabhupada just looked over at him and just said, "Jai." And he said that that was the only thing Prabhupada ever said to him. And he said that if me doing kirtan can get a jai out of Srila Prabhupada, then that's what he focused on. That one instruction that Srila Prabhupada, just to get that jaya to Srila Prabhupada. And I had one dream, and I was going to end there, but like I really wanted to share this because I feel that it's sort of in his mood. He really wanted to spread this Harinam Sankirtan, and he really wanted us to join together and just really do kirtan together and spend more time doing kirtan together. That would help our relationships, and whether a person feels like their nature is music or kirtan or whatever. He said, no, we should always just do kirtan. That should be our primary focus. And it was a dream I had. He came to me in my dream, and I was expressing my gratitude to him for his lectures. I was listening to his lectures, and I'm very grateful. And he, at that moment, he embraced me, and he whispered in my ear, he said, "We need you." And he got up, and some little girls came with like some baskets or some plates with prasadam, and he took a little and he left. And after that, I started following him. Like I went after him. I couldn't find him, and it got dark. And I was walking through the streets in Vrindavan, and then finally it was dark, and I looked and I saw the Krishna Balaram temple. So I told this dream to Madhava Prabhu. And he told me that it didn't really mean that, he wanted me in Vrindavan physically, but he wanted us to work together to spread this Harinam Sankirtan. So His Grace Ayanda Prabhu Ki Jai.
That Vrajavihari Prabhu said how intense was his kirtan and class when someone giving class is really giving Vrindavan class is not joke. You have to really, really know the Shastra, every single point. So that time, I think His Holiness Bhakti Chari Swami Maharaj was giving class. As he said, he was not present in the class. And suddenly I saw he was walking in the door and asked question. And from that day, that question was almost 1.5 hour continue, one after another. So I don't know, those that have been there in class, they were attend. Those days I see a lot of question. Your neighbor have a question, so a lot of hand is raised, just that question. So I really relish so much, and after that, any time I had class, I hear in Vrindavan, I was look for Mahendra Prabhu, when are you going to walk in the doorway and ask some kind of question, so you can relish. And then Kirtan was, I remember that one time it was a Kartik, I was there, and he started Kirtan in Damodar Ashtakam. And then Damodar Ashtakam, that's such an ecstatic Kirtan continued 3 hours. And 9:30, the temple management, they need to wash temple. So they request, Prabhu, please. Prabhu, Mahendra Prabhu continue kirtan, but they ask all the devotees move from temple, Kotiya, so they can clean the temple. So nobody listening. So then they put who's five, everyone, everybody got to wait. The devotee is still dancing, ecstatic. They finally remember that devotee pushed them out from temple Kotiya to move out. So he has to clean the temple for next morning program, almost 10 o'clock. So this one thing really I enjoyed, most cases I was always far away, I watch him. I really not feel that because he was really very intense in Krishna consciousness with his dress. It's not joke in ISKCON, you have something unusual dress. Present yourself, your own way to establish something, because ISKCON is very much, you cannot do this, Prabhu, because this is not our role. So the Mahendra Prabhu was totally different. He was his own style, own taste in Krishna consciousness. So he present Krishna consciousness his own way. So that's really I enjoy from far away, never really try to go close to him because I know he's really braja mood, really strong braja mood, so I'm not that mood, so better just watch from far away. So last time I was in Mayapur, and then he was, this was 11:30 night, I have most cases I sleep late night, so I was chanting a senior brahmachari building. There's a road walk from senior brahmachari building to that almost 200 feet from that distance. So Mahendra Prabhu was 11:30 at night, he was chanting his beat bag. And then everybody slept that time, is silent. Mayapur that time was a nice bridge and the weather was so nice. It's not cold, not hot that time. And he was really enjoying with the dham, he's looking left and right and chanting his beat bag. And this, I was seeing him, this, I was on a ground floor room, so I was chanting there. So I say, Hare Krishna, Mahendra Prabhu, you're enjoying Mayapur? Say yes, and then he just on the way start walk to me. I feel so offended that he really is going, he's interrupt his mood. Maybe you're chanting, he's going somewhere, or maybe going his room. So I just call this out of just I feeling this, and then he just start on the way walk to me, and he start talking almost 15-20 minutes. Finally, I say, Prabhu, please, I don't want to waste your time because your time is very available. So just then. This is the time I feel that how humble he is, such a personality, and I don't care who devotee call, he just on the way walk. So this really gave me the glimpse of that real devotee mood. And another thing in Vrindavan, that was time, I don't know the issue going on, that Mataji should be half and Prabhu should be half that time. So that time, Mangalarati, I was there. And this is the one mood I see Mahendra Prabhu different than another, any other mood. So he made chain, all the brahmachari stand in front. So this way, so maybe Mataji has a plan to, they're really going to push. They're going to stand in Radha Shyamsundar. They want to Krishna Balaram until Krishna Balaram to Radha Shyamsundar half, and Prabhuji can be the Krishna to Gornita half. This way, this maybe, but Mahendra Prabhu as a ISKCON standard, he wants to sit the Mataji standing behind, and Prabhu or Sannyasis, Brahmachari, they stand in the front. So anyhow, so he chained them up, all the Brahmachari stand, and then I saw suddenly just all the Mataji pushing Brahmachari like anything. So Mahendra Prabhu looked at them, he feeling a little disturbed, and then say, Hare Krishna. So then Kirtan was messed up anyhow. So he's really, really wonderful devotee. It is really, I feel bad that I'm going to go Vrindavan, not see him anymore, because it's a really great loss for our society. Because nowadays all the Prabhupada disciples, the such special soul, we need them so much for inspiration, because this kind of personality not going to, I don't know how lifetime we will see another going to come up with this kind of personality. So I really miss him so much, because when yesterday I was watching my Mayapur class, the skin I saw that's on the Prabhu left, I stood on devastated. This such a young, anyhow, Krishna have some plan. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Hey.
Hare Krishna, anybody else want to say something? Okay, well, this prasadam is being served already. Then we'll continue with kirtans here, as I said, all day. We'll be having kirtans, and then, of course, this evening we've got Harinam. And kirtan will go on till Mangalarti tomorrow. Of course, Mangalarti will be, as usual, 4:30. So everybody's welcome. Please do participate in the program. Be really nice. And again, as I said, all of today's and tomorrow's festivals will be dedicated to programs we dedicated to His Grace Mahendra Prabhu Ki Jai.